Beautiful. You may be seated. Thank you, Ted, Dorothy, and Tony. I'd like you to take your Bibles and go to the Gospel of Mark. And Reverend Martindale received this week one of the things for this occasion, which he passed on to me to share with you this evening. You see, we're right in the groove of things here. Now, I personally couldn't eat this myself. Just knowing that the cross does represent death, having a chocolate cross. Besides that, it's made wrong, so I brought my knife along here. Is that better? Oh, well. If I eat this, maybe I share it with some of you. I don't know. Somebody. There you go. This wasn't in the script, but at any rate, that's closer to the truth of what it actually would have looked like. Now, it wasn't one like this. It was where he had his hands above his head. Now, in the Gospel of Mark, this evening I'm sharing with you on the subject called the place, Golgotha. And when you're in Israel, they take you to a couple different places that are traditionally the sites. One is a Roman Catholic site, the other is predominantly a Protestant site, where they believe Golgotha is. I'm going to share with you a third location that has only been recently thought of, and I think this is supported by the scripture rather than by tradition. And in Mark chapter 15, in verse 15, we'll begin reading here. It says, "And so Pilate, willing to content the people, released Barabbas unto them, and delivered Jesus when he had scourged him to be crucified. And the soldiers led him away into a hall called Praetorium. And they called together the whole band, the band of soldiers. And they clothed him with purple and plaited a crown of thorns and put it about his head and began to salute him, 'Hail, King of the Jews,'" or Judeans. "And they smote him on the head with a reed and did spit upon him and bowing their knees, worshiped him." Now you see, traditionally, this period of time is relatively short, but in fitting all the records together, which Dr. Werwell has done in Jesus Christ, our Passover, the arrest would have taken place sometime Monday evening, because that evening, throughout the night, he was before Caiaphas and before Annas, who were both high priests that year, and it says in the morning, when the sun came up, is when they brought him before the whole Sanhedrin, and it was after that that they took him to Pilate. Then Pilate sent him to Herod, Herod sent him back to Pilate, and the judgment was made around the sixth hour, which would have been noon, under Roman reckoning, around noon. It would not have been the sixth hour of the night. In the first place, that would have been an impossibility, because he was already before the Sanhedrin in the morning, the early morning, at daybreak, and went to Pilate after that for the first time, let alone the second time. In the second place, they did not determine the evenings or the nights by hours. They determined it by watches. The daytime was reckoned in hours. And so the sixth hour would have to be noon on Tuesday. And then he went to the soldiers, and that's what this record is about. And they mocked him and so on throughout the afternoon, spit on him, bowed their knees to him, and there were quite a few soldiers there. And they probably continued this throughout the evening, perhaps even throughout the night. And it wasn't until the next morning that they led him out to crucify him. Now, where are we? Verse 20, "When they had mocked him, they took off the purple from him, put his own clothes on him, and led him out to crucify him. And they compel one Simon, a Cyrenian, who passed by coming out of the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to bear his cross. And they bring him unto the place, Golgotha, which is what I want to talk to you about today. The place, Golgotha, which is being interpreted the place of a skull. And they gave him to drink wine mingled with myrrh, but he received it not. And when they had crucified him, they parted his garments, casting lots upon them, what every man should take. And it was the third hour, so it's 9 o'clock in the morning. Now, if it was the sixth hour that he was before Pilate, then you can't go backwards. It would have to be the next day before you get to the third hour again when they crucified him. Then they put the superscription of his accusation, the king of the Judeans, over his head, and with him two robbers, one on the right, one on the left. And of course, they had led out two malefactors with him, so you've got now four that were crucified with Jesus, which is also covered in Jesus Christ, our Passover, and that he was numbered with the transgressors. Then you get to verse 29. And they that passed by railed on him, wagging their heads and saying, Ah, thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself and come down from the cross. So this location had to be by a road where people were passing by and could easily see him. It wasn't a place where you had to go out of the way, or it wasn't out in the wilderness someplace. It was by a main thoroughfare where a lot of people were passing by and they could wag their heads and so on. Then verse 31, likewise also the chief priests mocking said among themselves with the scribes, he saved others, himself he cannot save. So you've got the chief priests and the scribes, you've got the people that are passing by. It had to be by a road where all these things were taking place, a place even where the chief priests would have been on this preparation day for the Passover. Now look at John chapter 19. John chapter 19. The first thing I want you to do is get in your mind exactly what the scripture says, and the things that we've got to put together. First of all, it had to be by a thoroughfare where people were passing by, a place where the chief priests would have been as they passed by mocking and so forth. In John chapter 19, verse 19, and Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross, and the writing was, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews or Judeans. This title then read many of the Jews, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near to the city, and it was written in Hebrew, Greek, and Latin. So it's near the city, and it's a place where many could read the title as they pass by. But there's something wrong with this verse 20. This title then read many of the Judeans, for, then you see the words, the place. In the Greek text, it is not associated with where he was crucified. It's associated with the city. So that this would read, for where Jesus was crucified was nigh to the place of the city. The place of the city. Got that? That's the way it reads in the critical Greek text. This title then read many of the Judeans, for where Jesus was crucified was near to the place of the city. The place of the city, as I'm going to show you after a bit, was a term for the temple. The temple was called the place of the city. Furthermore, on the Mount of Olives, which was straight east from the temple, there was a road that led out of the temple over a bridge, over the Kidron Valley, and up to the peak of the Mount of Olives, where there was an altar. And that's where some of the animals were killed and the bodies burned before the blood was brought into the temple for sacrifice. That was the altar outside of the city. And that was also referred to as part of that place, the place which was the temple. So that altar, as well as the temple itself, they were all part of the place. Now, I want to show you Hebrews chapter 13 And keep that in mind, and we'll come back to the place after a bit. Hebrews 13, and in verse 10. We have an altar, whereof they have no right to eat, which serve the tabernacle. For the bodies of those beasts, whose blood, now watch this, is brought into the sanctuary. That's the main part of the temple. The blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest for sin, are burned without the camp. The bodies of those animals are burned without the camp. Wherefore Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered where? Without the gate. So wherever Jesus suffered had to be outside of the city, outside of the city of Jerusalem. And it is in this verse, these verses, associated with the priest burning the bodies of the sacrifice outside of the camp on an altar, which we know from the Mishnah, a second century commentary, was located on the Mount of Olives, straight east from the temple in the first century. So it says, let us go forth therefore unto him without the camp, bearing his reproach. Now if you go to Israel, where we were this last fall, they'll show you two different locations. Thank you, Bob. Two different locations where they believe the crucifixion took place. One is the Roman Catholic place, which is called the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And in that church, they have a place where they believe the crosses were and the place where they believe the grave was. That was established in the 4th century by Queen Helena, who is the mother of Constantine. Perhaps some of you are acquainted with the Emperor Constantine. His mother decided that's where it should go. She said she had a vision. Well, Queen Helena was quite a businesswoman because she located quite a few other places wrongly, which archaeologists have shown to be wrong. It was not something that was tradition from the first century. It was simply something she had established in the fourth century. The second place they take you is the predominantly Protestant location, which is called Gordon's Calvary, because it was discovered by a General Gordon in the 19th century, the last century. General Gordon was sitting on the north wall of the city of Jerusalem, and he saw this hill that looked like a skull. Now, I've got a picture of it here. You can see right here in this general area that it looks somewhat like a skull. And from that, he said, well, this must have been Calvary. Furthermore, he found a tomb nearby, which archaeologists have recently shown really came from a much earlier time period. However, for a while, people believed that this was the general area because it did look like a skull. However, that's the only reason for this being Golgotha. There's no other scriptural evidence for it. And I want to show you why the Mount of Olives scripturally represents the most possible place. Now, in the first century, the temple would have looked like this. This is the main part of the temple where the high priest went into. Once a year, he went into the very back part of that, which was the Holy of Holies, and that was on the Day of Atonement. But normally, they had an altar out in front here where they offered certain animal sacrifices. But there were others where, as we read in Hebrews, they did not offer here. This is facing toward the east. East would be over here, to this direction. And they would take the animals up to the top of the Mount of Olives on that altar that I mentioned, at the very peak. On the altar there, they burned the bodies of the animals and brought the blood into this sanctuary here in this temple area. Now, I mentioned the Mishnah, which is a second century Jewish commentary that talks about a bridge that leads from the temple area over the Kidron Valley up to the Mount of Olives. Now here you have the temple, and here's a reconstruction of what that bridge would have looked like. It was a double-tiered bridge so that the priests would be uncontaminated as they went over this bridge carrying the sacrifices to and fro from the Mount of Olives. Furthermore, the priest, the high priest, could stand here in the temple area and look up to the Mount of Olives to the east, and if they had two animals there, he could pick one. I don't know exactly how far away, maybe a half a mile or so, but he could look up there and he could pick which animal he wanted, the one on the left or the one on the right, see, by hand signals. So that's more or less what that bridge would have looked like in the first century going over the Kidron Valley. Now, here we're looking at Jerusalem, looking toward the west. This is the eastern wall of the city. Here's the Dome of the Rock. It's a Mohammedan mosque or Muslim mosque that sits in the temple area. And this is where they believe the temple sat for a long time. But archaeologists have now shown that it sat north of here, over here in a area where there's a rock, and on top of it, a little dome that's called the Dome of the Spirits, which is right here. This is the Dome of the Spirits, north of the Dome of the Rock. That's where they believe the temple actually sat. Now we're looking east. The hill you see in the background over here is the Mount of Olives. So that from the temple area to the eastern gate of the city, there would have been a bridge then over the Kidron and then a walkway up to the very peak of the Mount of Olives, and that's where that altar would have been. Now here we're looking west. You have the eastern gate, which is built right over where the eastern gate would have been back in the first century. This is not the one that was there then, but it's over the top of the ruins. And then the Dome of the Spirits, you can see it right back there in the middle of the picture, right in front of those arches. And now we're looking straight west so that if you drew a line from here through this eastern gate, then up the Mount of Olives, that would show you where that altar would be, which is right on top of the Mount of Olives. See that steeple up there? That's where the peak of the Mount of Olives is. And that's approximately where that altar outside of the city would have sat. Now the temple is actually over to the right of the picture here. But you see that green area coming down to the left of that steeple that's on top, a roadway coming down there. That is a road today, and it would have been the position of a road in the first century that the people would have traveled coming into the city. See that? They would have traveled along that road. The road that the priests would have used going to and from this altar would have come straight down to the temple area. And in between there, there's a cliff that we, when we were in Israel, felt that could have been the cliff or the area, the general area where the crucifixion should have taken place. Here's a close-up of that cliff. You see the road coming down through the middle of the picture here. And the cliff right over here to the right, you could picture five crosses on top of this cliff, the people passing by wagging their heads and yelling things at Jesus. Furthermore, the tomb that he was buried in was nearby. It was a new tomb that was built by Joseph of Arimathea. Remember that? And on the Mount of Olives, even today, there are many tombs. This is all graves. People even today anticipate the Messiah coming to the Mount of Olives, and that's why it's such a popular place to bury people. As a matter of fact, our tour guide told us that when we were there, that one of his ancestors were buried there because they believed the Messiah, and he's a Jew. The Messiah is coming to the Mount of Olives. Now, Bob Moynihan, Reverend Moynihan, got excited about the coloring book. Well, I got excited about Israel doing something else here when I got back. And so in my living room, I began to put together a model of Israel. And much to my wife's dismay, I had lumber and cardboard and glue and things all over the living room floor. And shortly after that, I moved it out here. And Joseph Milano, who works in the bookstore, took an interest in it. And he did most of the work, although John Shainhite, John Crouch, and I understand a few others have had their hands into it, have finished putting this together, but Joseph did the most of the work on it so that we'd have something to illustrate Jerusalem and exactly what happened there and how it looked. Now, this is the city as it would have looked in the first century. I might point out, this is the Mount of Olives over here. You can tell by the olive on top. I specifically requested black ones, because I don't like the green ones. If Wanda had been up here, they would have been green. She told me that. Well, that was good. I'd go good with those hamburgers afterwards. All right. Well, anyway, if we'd have thought this through ahead of time, we would have had olives now tonight to serve with the burgers, but I suppose we didn't. Well, anyway, here's the city as it would have looked in the first century. Now, when David captured, the Jebusite city, this is awful, isn't it? If you've never been here before, you have to excuse me. I'm just not like most people that preach. Okay. The city that David captured was the Jebusite city, which was just this southern area down here. Then when Solomon built onto the city, he added this area up north and built the temple. Now, the temple didn't look like this in Solomon's time. It was much smaller. And then later on, some other kings added a western part to the city, which was destroyed by the Babylonians. However, by the time of Christ, it had all been rebuilt, and this is approximately what it would have looked like in the first century when Christ was there. This is the Antonio Fortress, where they kept the Romans kept their eye on the temple. Watch what was going on. This temple was built by Herod the Great. Is one of his most prominent architectural works that he did. It began in approximately 18 B.C. and was not finished until, 64 A.D. or something, and 6 years later it was destroyed. So anyway, this is the temple area that he built and the way it would have looked in the time of Christ. This is that temple proper that we saw in that one picture before. Over here is where Caiaphas's house was, where Annas also would have lived. That's where Jesus was first taken after his arrest. Then he was taken to the Sanhedrin, which would have met here in the morning in the temple area. Then he was sent over to Pilate, who would have been in the Praetorium. As a matter of fact, it says that in the scripture, the Praetorium. Not Antonius' fortress, but the Praetorium. Today they always take you to Antonius' fortress. But he would have been here. Herod would also have been staying in this fortress, the Praetorium, and he sent him to Herod. Herod sent him back to Pilate, and then after judgment was made, the soldiers would have had him in the courtyard. And then he was led from there over here to this area. You can't see it from there, I'm sure, but we've got five little sticks there representing the five crosses here, which was in this area near the place of the city. Here's the altar on top of the Mount of Olives. There would have been a road coming from the temple over this bridge, over the Kidron Valley. This is the Kidron. Up the Mount of Olives to this altar. And that's where the body was burned and then the blood brought into the temple area. I've also got it on your map. You've got a map in your program here today, too. You get a good clear picture of this. Here's the temple. Here's the eastern gate. And then a bridge over the Kidron Valley and the road that led up to this altar. This is the road the people would have taken coming into Jerusalem. And this is the area of that cliff that I showed you where the crosses would have been. Now, that's in Hebrews, it talks about that altar that's outside of the city. Now go back to the Gospel of John, chapter 19. John chapter 19. Verse 17. And he, bearing his cross. Now we read in Mark it was not Jesus bearing his cross, it was Simon of Cyrene that actually carried the physical cross. Jesus would have been too beat up at this time because of all the suffering to carry, hardly carry his own weight, let alone carry a cross. But what he carried was the sins of the world. That was the cross he bore as he went to the Mount of Olives, to Golgotha. He, bearing his cross, went forth into a place called the place of a skull, which is called in the Hebrew Golgotha, where they crucified him and two other with him. Now on either side, one. Remember in the critical Greek text that word one isn't there. So it's two on either side, and Jesus in the midst. And Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross, and the writing was, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews, or Judeans. This title then read many of the Judeans, for where Jesus was crucified was near to the, what? The place of the city. And it was written in Hebrew, Greek, and Latin. It was near to the place of the city. Now this temple area is the place of the city, but this altar was also part of that place, and this would qualify as part of the place. Now Gordon's Calvary is up here to the north, which is somewhat near the place, you could say. The one the Roman Catholics have is over here on the west side of the city, somewhat removed in distance, just as close to the temple area, but this is actually very close to that altar outside of the city and would qualify as near the place of the city. In John chapter 11, John chapter 11, verse 47, then gathered the chief priests and the Pharisees a council and said, what do we? For this man doeth many miracles. If we let him thus alone, all men will believe on him, and the Romans shall come and take away both our place and nation. What they were concerned about here was the place, the temple, and the things associated with the temple. And the nation, okay? But the place refers to the temple. That was common usage of that word, the place, the temple area. In Matthew chapter 24, Matthew 24, verse 15. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel, that's in Daniel 9, he talks about the son of perdition coming in, setting up that abomination of desolation in the temple area, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy what? Place, the holy place. That was the temple area. It was the place, or the holy place, as it's called there. Chapter 27, Matthew 27. Verse 33. And when they were come unto a place, or the place, called Golgotha, that is to say, the place of a skull. It was, Golgotha was part or associated with the place of the skull. Ezekiel chapter 43, we'll be back to Golgotha in a moment, but it was the place of the skull. Ezekiel chapter 43. Ezekiel 43, verse 21. Thou shalt take the bullock also of the sin offering, and he shall burn it in the appointed place of the house, without the sanctuary. Now, let me take you back to the time of Moses when he first built the altar. These certain sacrifices were to be burnt outside of the camp. And it specifically said that it was to be on the eastern side of the camp. Okay? On the eastern side of the camp. Then, when they established a temple in the time of Solomon, they would have built a permanent place. Because remember, the tabernacle floated around from here to there. So wherever they stopped, they always had it facing east, and then to the east they had that appointed place without the camp, where they would burn these sacrifices. But once the temple was built, then they had a specific place, which we know, according to the Mishnah, in the first century, was here on the Mount of Olives, straight east from the temple, with the road, the bridge, and everything else that the Mishnah mentions. Here, where it says, burn it in the appointed place of the house. That word, appointed place, in Hebrew, is miphkad. And I'll spell it for you, M-I-P-H-Q-A-D. Miphkad, M-I-P-H-Q-A-D. The miphkad is the appointed place, or a place of registry. That's what the word miphkad means. A place of registry, or a place of polling, where they counted people. They counted them specifically in this area for the temple tax prior to the feast. In other words, you came to this area, registered, and then paid your temple tax prior to the feast. That's what that word miphkad means. And they were to burn the sacrifice in this appointed place. This is where the altar was outside of the city. So not only was this miphkad the altar where the animal was to be sacrificed, it was where the people came to be registered, so they would be passing by on this road in and out of the city all day long, prior to the feast. Understand? See how that works? That's why if he was crucified near this registry place, that would explain why all the people were passing by. And that's what miphkad means, the appointed place or place for registry, or where the people were polled for the temple tax. Now, Nehemiah chapter 3. Nehemiah chapter 3. the Mifkad, the appointed place where people went to register. Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 31. Here's where they were repairing the walls. After the Babylonian captivity, they came back and repaired the walls of Jerusalem. And it talks about all the different gates they repaired. In verse 29, they repaired up to the keeper of the east gate. The east gate is this gate right here that led over this bridge up to the altar. That's the east gate. Then you go north a little bit, and this was not there in the first century, but in the time of Nehemiah, there was another gate up close to the corner, verse 31. After him repaired Melchiah the goldsmith's son unto the place of the Nethinims and of the merchants over against the gate, what? Mifkad, and to the going up of the corner. So somewhere in here between the east gate and the corner, there was a Mifkad gate. And that Mifkad gate would have been the gate leading to the area of the Mifkad, where the people went to register. You see that? All right. Now, 1 Chronicles 23. The word Golgotha, it's the place of the skull. Like the Mifkad was the place of registry, the place where they went to register to pay the temple tax or to be polled. Golgotha, the Hebrew word, actually that is a Hebrew word, but the actual Hebrew word is spelled Golgoleth, G-U-L-G-O-L-E-T-H. G-U-L-G-O-L-E-T-H, Golgoleth, and that means a skull or head or a pole, P-O-L-L, pole. That word, the Hebrew word, Golgoleth, is used 11 times in the Old Testament. 11 times. 3 times it's used of an actual physical skull or head. The other 8 times, it's used of a pole or registry. I want to show you a couple here in 1 Chronicles 23. 1 Chronicles 23, verse 3. Now the Levites were numbered from the age of 30 years and upward, and their number by their Golgotha, by their poles. Man by man was 38,000. 8 times out of the 11, Golgoleth is used of a pole rather than a head, because it stands for the head count, just like we would use that term today. In the same chapter, in verse 24, is another one. These were the sons of Levi after the house of their fathers, even the chief of the fathers, as they were counted by number of names by their poles, Golgoleth, there it is, by their poles, that did the work of the service of the house of the Lord from the age of 20 years and upward. Now, you really have to be smart to figure these things out, because you've got to be able to open up a Young's Concordance and look up this word, Golgoleth, and find out exactly how often it's used, see? No, you don't. Just open it up and you can see it. 3 times it's used of a head, a physical skull. And the other 8 times it's used of a pole, a count, a number of people. And that's what this word meant back in the Gospels where we just read. Let's go back there again to Matthew 27. Matthew 27. Verse 33, when they were come unto a place called Golgotha, the place called Golgotha, that is to say, the place of the poll, the place of the registry, Not that it looked like a skull, but that it was a place where the people went to be registered. And what was that area? The Mifkad area, the place of registry, where they went to be registered for the temple tax prior to the feast on the top of the Mount of Olives. In the vicinity of this altar, as we read in Ezekiel, was right near that altar. So this altar served as the place where the animals' bodies were burnt, some of them, and also the place where the people came to be registered. So there would be a constant flow of people coming to and from this area all day long, passing by this cliff or this area where the crucifixion would have taken place, and wagging their heads and yelling things at them. Besides that, the priests would have been using this road from the bridge straight up to the altar, hitting him from the backside. Besides that, it says the two robbers on either side of him were yelling things at him, so he was surrounded. See? Criticism all day long. Luke chapter 19. Another thing that enters into the picture is the Roman custom of crucifying. Whenever they crucified their prisoners, it was near the place of the crime or near the place where they were arrested. Now, what was the crime? You in chapter 19? Keep your finger there and look at chapter 23. Chapter 23, verse 1. The whole multitude of them arose and led him unto Pilate. They began to accuse him, saying, "We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to give tribute to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a what? King." That was the accusation, that he was the king. That was his crime. On Luke 23, verse 47. 23:47. "Now when the centurion saw..." Look at 37. They say, "If thou be the king of the Jews, save thyself." That was his accusation. Then, verse 38, "A superscription also was written over him, letters of Greek, Latin, and Hebrew. This is the king of the Judeans." That was his crime of which he was accused. Back in Luke chapter 19, verse 32. Verse 29. Let's start in 29. "And it came to pass when he was come nigh to Bethphage and Bethany." Now, I better point this out on your map. I guess it's not on that one. Over here. Here's the Mount of Olives. Bethphage is right on this side of the Mount of Olives, on the eastern slope. Bethany is over here off of the model someplace, much further on this side of the Mount of Olives. Okay, it would actually slope way down over here. And this is where Bethany would have been. When Jesus Christ ascended, it says he took them out as far as to what? Bethany, not Bethphage. And yet they always take you to Bethphage today and show you the footprint where he ascended. But that's not scriptural. The scripture says he ascended from Bethany, okay? Not Bethphage. Okay, so now you know where those two places are, and he's heading from Bethany, where he always stayed, up to the peak, the summit of the Mount of Olives. Now where were we? Verse 29. "Came nigh to Bethphage and Bethany at the mount called the Mount of Olives. He sent two of his disciples, saying, Go ye into the village over against you, in the which at your entering you shall find a colt tied, whereon yet never a man sat. Loose him and bring him hither. And if any man ask you, why do you loose him? Thus shall you say unto him, because the Lord hath need of him. And they that were sent went their way and found even as he had said unto them. And as they were loosing the colt, the owners thereof said unto them, why loose ye the colt? And they said, the Lord hath need of him. And they brought him to Jesus, and they cast their garments upon the colt, and they set Jesus thereon. And he went, or as he went, they spread their clothes in the way. And when he, that sounds like the Rock of Ages, always clothes all over the place. You know, we got giveaway afterwards. You know, they're left over from the rock. Well, anyway. And when he was come nigh, even now at the descent of the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of the disciples began to rejoice and praise God with a loud voice for all the mighty works that they had seen, saying, blessed be the King. The what? The King that cometh in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. That's where he made his triumphal entry, from the Mount of Olives, using this very road to come down, and the people would have spread their clothes in the way as he went, using this very road here. And where he, that's his triumphal entry. Traditionally, it's on Palm Sunday, which is today. But there were actually two entries. This one on the colt, the one in Matthew where he came on two animals, the ass and the colt, which was an entry of blessing. One of those entries was on Friday and one on Saturday. It's in Jesus Christ, our Passover, and shows how you can work all those days using the calendar and so on. Well, anyway, he made both of those triumphal entries as the King. He descended down this road on the Mount of Olives and went into the city, and the people said, blessed is the King, wasn't it? Blessed be the King that cometh in the name of the Lord, peace in heaven and glory in the highest. So where was the location of his crime, where the people proclaimed him as King? Was right along that road. So it would again make sense for the Romans to crucify him on some prominent cliff along that road, the location of the crime. Also in chapter 22, chapter 22, verse 39. And he came out and went, as he was wont, to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples also followed him. Where did he go? Mount of Olives. This is right after the Last Supper. He goes to the Mount of Olives, and that's where he prays in the Garden of Gethsemane, until you get to verse 47, while he yet spake, behold, a multitude, and he that was called Judas, one of the 12, went before him, them, and drew near unto Jesus to kiss him. That's where he was arrested, on the Mount of Olives, in the Garden of Gethsemane. Now, traditionally, they place the Garden of Gethsemane somewhere down here in this area, near the bottom of the mountain. But it could have been any place on that mountain. His arrest could have been, at least it was in the general vicinity of where this location of the crucifixion is. It's the location, or the Mifkad area, where the people went to be registered. It's the Golgotha area, which is the place of the pole, the place where people went to be registered. It's along a prominent road leading into the city. It's the area of his crime, where he made his triumphal entry into the city. It's also the area, general area of his arrest, where he was arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane. Besides that, it is near the altar outside of the city where the animal sacrifices, their bodies were burnt, at least certain sacrifices. And Hebrews says, so Jesus suffered without the gate. Now, it doesn't say in that vicinity, but it's the way God lines everything else up so beautifully with the other Old Testament records and things. It's neat how this lines up with it too, where he was crucified in this same area where that altar was, where the other animals' bodies would have been burnt. And then the blood, of course, taken into the temple, but not his blood. Matthew chapter 27. I mentioned this before when I was showing the slides to you. But in Matthew 27, it tells us that the tomb was nearby where he was laid, and it had been dug by Joseph of Arimathea. In verse 57, when even was come, 27:57, there came a rich man of Arimathea named Joseph, who also himself was Jesus' disciple. He was also on the Sanhedrin, the ruling body of Israel. I'm sure that he did not vote to put Jesus to death. Neither did Nicodemus, who also would have been on the Sanhedrin. But all the others voted against him. And I think under Roman law, you had to have at least one dissenting vote, or two, was it? I forget, John. One vote, dissenting vote. Otherwise, you'd think the people were in cahoots together or something. At any rate, there would have been at least two abstaining votes, I'm sure, or two that voted against the crucifixion. So anyway, here, Joseph of Arimathea, verse 58, he went to Pilate and begged the body of Jesus. Then Pilate commanded the body to be delivered, and when Joseph had taken the body, he wrapped it in a clean linen cloth and laid it in his own new tomb, one that he had dug, which he had hewn in the rock. And he rolled a great stone to the door of the sepulcher and departed. And as I pointed out on that one slide a while ago, even today, there are many tombs and graves in this whole area. There are some tombs from the first century and before, some old tombs. And Joseph could have had a tomb in this general area where he would have laid that body in that new tomb that he had dug out of the rock. So the logic for it being in this area, the Mount of Olives, rather than on some other side of the city from a scriptural standpoint, seems to make sense to me anyway. And even the Jews today look for the Messiah to come to the Mount of Olives in Ezekiel chapter 10. Ezekiel chapter 10. Verse 18. Then the glory of the Lord departed from off the threshold of the house. This is talking about the temple, the house of God, and stood over the cherubims. Now, when the glory of the Lord moves off of the temple area, something exciting is going to happen. Because remember when in the Old Testament they had the tabernacle, whenever the pillar of cloud or the pillar of fire moved, then the tabernacle went with it. They carried it with it. They followed it. The glory of the Lord was there with it in the wilderness. When they established the temple, the glory of the Lord was in the holy place, the inner sanctum of that temple area. It was in the back part of this holy place right here, in the back part of it. That's the place the priest went only once a year, which indicated that the way into the holiest of all was not yet available. And yet it says in Ephesians, we have access with boldness to him, see? We've got access to the Father. So, here the glory of the Lord moved from the house and stood over the cherubims, and the cherubims lifted up their wings and mounted up from the earth in my sight. When they went out, The wheels also were beside them, and everyone stood at the door of the east gate of the Lord's house, and the glory of the God of Israel was over them above. Now, where's the east gate? Right here. Right here. So the glory of the Lord moved from the temple to the east gate, right here. And then in chapter 11, what happened? Chapter 11, verse 23, 22. Then did the cherubims lift up their wings, and the wheels beside them, and the glory of the God of Israel was over them above, and the glory of the Lord went up from the midst of the city and stood upon the mountain, which is on the east side of the city. So it moved from there up to this area on the east side, the Mount of Olives. Now look at chapter 43 of Ezekiel. You see, there's some things that are spectacular regarding the return of Christ that are associated with the Mount of Olives. And that's why even today, Jews consider that such a significant place. Ezekiel 43, of course, in verse 21 is where you had the Miphkad area to burn the bullock on the appointed place, the Miphkad. But I want to look here at verse 4. And the glory of the Lord came into the house by the way of the gate whose process